job creation, controlling health care costs, and dealing with youth violence are some of the issues topping Governor Patrick's agenda in his coming new term. The governor will be sworn into office tomorrow for his second consecutive term and is opening it with a large round of media interviews. We spoke with him in his State House office late yesterday.
Governor Patrick, thanks for having us over. We appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
You've indicated you want to shake things up, shake up state government in term two. What's that mean, and what shakes?
Well, I think it's really about, you know, making sure that we've got the right team in place to drive an ambitious agenda. It's about continuing, and if we can, accelerating the pace of job growth. We've made some great progress. We're adding jobs faster than most other states. We want to use the tools we have, thanks to the Achievement Gap bill, to really start to close that achievement gap. And we want to crack the code, finally, on health care costs. 98% of our residents have health insurance today. Not another state in America can touch that, and I'm very proud of that. But it costs too much. And the work we've done to cap rates, to enable small businesses to get the buying power that big businesses do by joining together and buying their health care, those are steps in the right direction and will make a difference and have already. But I think payment reform is the next big step, and it will be hard. And so having a team across government that wakes up every morning saying, now what can I do in my area of influence to help drive that agenda forward and leave a better Commonwealth is what we want to have.
Let's talk about a couple of those things. As you mentioned, the economy is beginning to bounce back at least some. Some jobs are being created, but a lot of the major employers in Massachusetts have signaled a basic unwillingness to create a large number of jobs, as they did in the past. Give me a concrete example or two of what you plan to change that to accelerate job growth.
Well, first of all, most jobs in Massachusetts are in small businesses, 50 or fewer. And overwhelmingly, that represents the type of business we have in Massachusetts. And their two biggest concerns right now, as the commercial activity that they see is picking up, is the cost of health care and access to capital. We put in place already, through something called the Commonwealth Capital Fund, a way that the state can offer loan guarantees to help small banks, community banks, start lending again to small businesses. This has just gone into effect, and that should help. And I mentioned the work that we have done and want to continue to do around the cost of health care, which will make a big difference. Our strategy on job growth has been focused on three things: on education investments, on innovation, and on infrastructure. And then, of course, the unglamorous work of government, the roads and bridges and rails and broadband expansion and housing investments, which have been neglected for a long time. And we started to turn that around in the first term. We want to continue that in the second.
If education is key to job growth, can you say that public higher education will not suffer budget cuts in the coming state budget that you're going to unveil within a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
That will contain, as you have said, $1.5 billion in budget cuts.
That's right. We're going to spend $1.5 billion less next year than this year because we have to, and everything is on the table. And we're well past the point of fat and excess in many respects. We're looking at muscle and, in some cases, scraping bone, which means that in every case, including in higher ed, I'm looking at different scenarios. I'm not signaling one thing or another. But we're also looking at ways to do what has to be done differently, and whether there are ways to find savings there and to shore up in the places where we need to.
All right. Let's stay on the budget for a second here. The other budget signals, some of them have said, as you pointed out, everything is on the table, including local aid to cities and towns. Can they really take more pain?
Well, look, almost everything is going to feel some of this gap closing that we have to do because we've had to take billions of dollars out of spending already. And although the economy is coming back, we are recovering, but we're not recovered. There are a couple of things that are important to cities and towns that we have already done to help them contain their costs and also to raise revenue independent of state aid. And there are a couple of things that we still have to do. I mean, every city and town right now can move their municipal retirees to Medicare, and the value of that is at least as much as so-called plan design, if not more, in the aggregate. I think the other issue is plan design, this whole question of how municipalities negotiate and provide health care to municipal workers. And we have taken some steps in the past to help them contain their health care costs. I think we need to continue on that path and maybe take some bolder steps, and the unions have to work with us to help us do that.
Let me ask this question. Are unions going to be targeted in Massachusetts as they are being in other states, public employee unions, in terms of trying to get the unions to take lower pay raises or no pay raises or going after other parts of their packages, including health care benefits?
Well, we're way ahead of all that. Remember, we've got concessions from the public employee unions, I think with only one exception, 90-something percent of the state employees in the last term. 0% increases, furlough days, and so forth. And they helped. They helped us to close the budget gaps that we've been dealing with already, and I thank them for that. We did pension reform, which affected benefits for many, many unions, and we will have to come back to pension reform because there's still some unfinished business.
Are you going to be able to stick by your pledge to not raise taxes? And what about fees, which in past administrations have risen dramatically at times of budget crisis?
I don't have any plans to propose a tax increase in the budget I will file at the end of January. I know the team is looking at various scenarios on how to close the gap, and I'll see the sort of final menu of those scenarios in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Since you won't be running for a third term, and you don't have to be concerned about re-election in 4 years. To what extent are you free, do you think, to take more risks in your second term? And does it allow you to follow your heart and gut instead of a political compass?
You know why I'm smiling, Bob, is because through moments in the first term, I was accused, if you will, of doing just that, which is making judgments based on what I thought was right for the Commonwealth, but not necessarily right for my own political future. The beauty of not being a career politician, Bob, is that I can do the job without thinking about my career. I can think about and focus on what I think is best for the long-term interests of the people of the Commonwealth. I've done that for 4 years. I'm going to do it for four more.
Governor Patrick, thank you very much for having us over.
Appreciate it. I'm glad you could come.
Governor Patrick also spoke about the parole system controversy following the fatal shooting last week of a Woburn police officer by an inmate released by the State Parole Board in 2008.
Now is an opportunity, it seems to me, to take from this tragedy some lessons and integrate those into the way we think about this comprehensive fix.
Timetable?
Quickly.
To see the governor talk about the parole issue, visit our website, WBUR.org, and join WBUR tomorrow for live coverage of Governor Patrick's inauguration starting at 12:30.